We're now happy to be joined by Mark Hartigan, Cup champ with the Anaheim Ducks and the Detroit Red Wings. How are you doing, Mark?
Pretty good, guys. How are you guys doing?
We're pretty good over here as well. And I know it's a difficult time across the world right now. Just wanted to see how you and your family are doing it at this point in time.
Yeah, so far so good. You know, go a little stir crazy here and there, but for the most part, my wife's able to work from home, and it's summertime, so I get to do a lot of yard work.
We've been, and that's we're all finding ourselves doing new things that maybe we haven't necessarily been doing in a long time. But thank you for joining us today. We've been doing a Cup Champ conversation on our show here, where we talk to players, executives, coaches who have been on cup winning teams and really tried to find out what that formula is, what that key contributing fact to being a cup contender and a winner especially is. I want to actually start with you at the beginning of your career, though. You started off in the pro ranks anyways in Atlanta with the Atlanta Thrashers back in the early 2000s, and this was a couple of years into the league for that franchise. How is it to play hockey in Atlanta? Because as we know, the team doesn't, you know, exist anymore, and it was such a new frontier for the NHL. How was that experience for you?
Obviously making it to the NHL, first of all, was super exciting, and I was completely looking forward to it. But once, you know, a bit of that novelty, let's call it, wears off a little bit, and you realize when you are playing in Atlanta, it's not like playing in Canada, that's for sure. The building was a lot quieter. It just wasn't the same feel. You go to the rink, you know, a lot of times it felt like we were on the road a lot, because where our practice rink was out in Duluth is about 45 minutes without traffic. So game days, we would do our pregame skate down Phillips Arena downtown, and we'd stay at the hotel right there, because driving in at game time was, if your battle of the traffic is about 2 hours, 2.5 hours, if you wanted to stay at your house in Duluth. So you'd stay in the hotel, then you'd go to the rink. Everything just felt like you're always on the road. And, you just didn't have that strong fan base that I'm sure the city was hoping to get.
And when you were playing in Atlanta there, Mark, a very young Ilya Kovalchuk was just starting his career in the NHL as well, and it didn't take him long to make his mark. What were your impressions of playing alongside him and seeing him in practice? What was it like to be alongside Ilya Kovalchuk at that point in his career?
Yeah, he was obviously a special talent at that young age. And, speed, it's not like it was today, but he had that extra gear, compared to what other guys had. What he brought in with his quickness, like his quick shot, his quick release, his feet were quick. You know what? Honestly, he wasn't even that great a shape. You know, he was still a kid. He loved, coming from Russia. He loved his McDonald's and stuff, but the things that he could do on the ice were just incredible. Like his stick handling, his speed, like I was saying, everything was just, off the charts. And he was just, 19 years old? He was quite the phenom at that time. And Heatley was there as well. They complimented each other. So Heatley, great passer, great shooter. He didn't have the speed as Kovalchuk, but he could definitely make the plays like Kovalchuk could.
Well, Kovalchuk's also been training. I saw a video on the internet as well on Twitter where he's prepping to fight as well. So there you go. Now he's on a team with the Washington Capitals. He's willing to do anything to win these days. You ever thought you'd see that, Mark?
No, and that is a lot different than, the young Kobe. When he got traded to Montreal, obviously I get to see him a lot more than when he was in LA. You could see it in his eyes, a bit more passion, a little bit more commitment to the game and wanting to be there each and every day instead of just kind of going through the motions, if you will. With Atlanta, it kind of does that to you. It kind of becomes kind of a ho-hum. You don't get super excited getting to the rink. It was just one of those places where it was just hard to get up for the game. There's a lot of times when we were on the road, we got more up for those games, whether it was more of a NHL city, right? So with Kobe now, you can definitely see it when he's out there. He wants to be there, and he's pushing himself a lot harder.
So, Mark, a little bit later in your career, you're traded from Columbus midseason to the Anaheim Ducks, to a team that eventually would go on to win the Stanley Cup. And, you know, obviously going from a not very competitive team to a team that has several future Hall of Famers that had its eyes on a Stanley Cup run. How exciting was that moment for you?
Oh, yeah, that was quite exciting. Because I remember, you know, I was with Columbus for a while. I felt like at that point I couldn't do much more in the American League to prove myself. So I was at that point, I was looking for, you know, a new place, a bit of a change, see if I can get an opportunity somewhere different. And, you know what, me and my buddy Joe Motzko, that I went to university with as well, we both got traded to Anaheim at the time. And it was, I remember how excited I was. Because, you know, when you're in the American League, you're not really following all the NHL teams. Until I got traded to Anaheim, then you look it up, you look at how they're doing, and right away I was like, holy man, we really got a chance. There isn't a real good opportunity to, you know, go for a run to win the Stanley Cup. And sure enough, we did, and we had an unbelievable team.
Oh, you definitely did. And as Jamie mentioned, Hall of Famers galore on that team. But the first time you walked into that room after the trade, you've got Pronger, you've got Niedermeyer, you've got Teemu Selänne in that room. What went through your head?
Yeah, it was a little bit surreal. When you walk into those scenarios, you're a little bit gun shy, right? You're sitting there, you're just trying to soak it all in, not trying to overdo the excitement, but just try to soak it all up and open your ears and try to listen and just try to get to do, you know, go there and do what you need to do. And try not to overplay your game, which, of course, I think I did a few times. You know, you try to impress them. But, you know what, they were great. They were great guys. They took me right in, and they didn't even skip a beat. Like, Timo is just such a good guy and always willing to help out anybody.
Brian Burke was the general manager there. He's the one who brought you in. Fans here in Vancouver, of course, very familiar with Berkey. He works with us at Sportsnet now. We know he's got a big personality. Did you have an experience or a Berkey moment in your time with Anaheim that really stands out to you?
nothing too crazy. I think it's more of some stories that we had with our 10-year anniversary of winning the cup, when a lot of us were able to make it back to Anaheim, and just some of the stories he was saying on the bus when we were all together, just more of stuff for the guys, and seeing him in a different light of just our GM. Now he was just a friend at that point, right, where it wasn't you're minding your P's and Q's when he's your boss, but after the fact, when you're a 10-year reunion and he's not your boss anymore, you get to hear a lot of neat insights and what his thoughts were back when we were winning the Cup.
You're listening to Reach Deep. We're joined by Mark Hartigan, Cup champ with the Anaheim Ducks and the Detroit Red Wings, two-time Cup champion. Well, I wanted to get your thoughts on this, though, because, you know, we've talked to a number of players, maybe at certain points in their career, they did have to sit up in the press box, and they were kind of that black ace role, something that you did as well on both of those Cup runs. Yep. Is that challenging to be sitting there and just waiting for your time and waiting for your spot?
It certainly is. You know what? Everybody thinks it's it's such a great ride, and you got a front seat to it. But it's a lot more than that. You know, you really have to stay focused, and because it could happen at any moment. I was I wasn't just sitting up in the press box most of the time. For 95% of the playoff games, the ones that I didn't play, I was warming up as well, just in case somebody, whether it was got sick or somebody got injured in warm up. So I was, coming there like I had to play. So I did warm ups, game time warm ups. And, so you really have to stay committed, stay focused, and being ready to jump right in there. And a lot of times with playoffs, as you know, there's lots of bumps and bruises, and there's lots of guys that don't do pregame skates. And so, I'm jumping in there, whether it's replacing Andy McDonald as center because he can't do practice that morning, or whether it's Pavel Datsyuk or Henrik Zetterberg, whoever it is, I'm jumping into those spots for practice. So you always got to be ready. You always got to, because you never know what's going to come next. Right. So it's not just a front seat ride, but at the same time, it is. It's obviously enjoyable being there and being part of it.
Well, and you mentioned the challenge of just staying prepared and staying ready, and you did end up suiting up with the Anaheim Cup run for one game in the playoffs. What was that experience like? Was it difficult to flip that switch and all of a sudden say, "Oh man, I'm in a Stanley Cup playoff game now"?
Well, you know what? I played a few games before that in regular season after I got traded there. So I was fitting in good with the team, and I actually I remember I lost my guy down low in I think it was the third period in the first game, the game that I played, and the guy got able to go to the net kind of free, but you know, we had a D-man in front, and Jagr made a save, and then I never saw the ice again after that. So I understand where Randy Carlyle's head was, because he didn't know me that well either, right? So, you know, I come in late in the season and play a few games. So his trust level for certain guys was fairly low, and he didn't want to see me make that mistake again, I assume.
So, Mark, you're 28 years old at that point. You go on to win that cup that season with Anaheim. But even as a veteran player at that point, what do you pick up from those guys, those veteran players, those leaders on that team that kind of, you know, that helps you move forward with the rest of your career? Was there something that stood out from that run that you said, yeah, I got to channel this, I got to develop this as a part of my game or as my makeup?
Yeah, absolutely. With between Anaheim and Detroit, just kind of go back a little bit with those two teams. You may even ask this question later, but there's very, very close similarities with those teams, with the calmness in the locker room throughout the entire playoffs, whether it's a big game, whether it's game one of the first series or game six of the fourth series. There's always a calmness, and learning from, you know, Lidstrom, Niedermeyer, Solani, all these veteran guys, they're just so, you know, they don't say a lot, but when they do say something, you're definitely, everybody opens their ears. So instead of just being a guy that just talks, and people are just kind of, you know, in one ear, out the other, with these guys, they show it on the ice every time, every single time. And when they do speak, you open your ears. Everybody listens, no matter who you are. And that was definitely one of the things off the ice. And then on the ice, it's just the calmness in your D zone. Like, you'll see a lot of young guys start to panic in the D zone, and they start to do too much. And I did that definitely in my early on in my career. I started to try to do too much in the D zone, and I learned a lot from those guys. Just they just kept telling me, stay in your position. Well, like, don't overdo anything. We'll make sure you get the puck, and you do your job, I'll do mine. And it definitely helped. It definitely brought a calmness to my game.
Well, you mentioned going to Detroit after winning that cup with Anaheim. Being in that locker room, because I look over that roster in Detroit, and you had, you know, the elder statesman of the league at that point, with Chris Chelios was on that team, among others. There's that early crew of Detroit players that won the cup, and then there's that newer generation of Datsyuk and Zetterberg. What kind of blend was that in the locker room, and how, you know, were there challenges to get everybody on the page since it was such a diverse group?
Oddly, no, there wasn't at all. It was such another great group of guys. You know, like you said, some of those older guys have been playing with each other for so long, and everybody just kind of followed suit from there. There was no, every day in that locker room was such a pleasure to be in. Everybody would just, they come there, do their job, bring a smile, hard work, and you know what, they then go home and do what you need to do at home. It was just as simple as that. There was nothing complicated. There was no drama, nothing. People, it was just such an enjoyable environment. Then you, as a side note, you got guys like Gordie Howe always kind of stopping by in the locker room after practice in the morning. You know, Konstantinov, Ted Lindsay. You know, it was just incredible. Like some of the same people and everybody listened, everybody did their job. And it was just, again, it was one of those incredible years that I'll never forget.
And after your time in Detroit, Mark, you ended up playing in Russia in what at the time was the newly formed KHL. You were there for the first year of that league's existence. What was that experience like being part of a brand new league in Russia?
That was it was an experience, that's for sure. I definitely enjoyed it. So I ended up signing with Latvia, so Dynamo Riga, and it was their first year because there was a Super League before in Russia, and there were some of those teams like Dynamo Moscow. But this was the first year since, man, I want to say early 70s that like Dynamo Riga was used to be in, like, at least playing in the Russian Super League. So that was a pretty neat experience playing Latvia, Riga, Latvia. If anybody has a chance that's overseas in Sweden, go take the ferry across the Baltic and go see Riga, Latvia. It's beautiful. So I enjoyed that. It was the first year with in the KHL, and the travel, holy man, some of the places you have to go, it's incredible. Like, we were way on the, what was it, the west side, and going to the east coast to like Khabarovsk. That, man, that was like all day of flying, about 15 hours just to get across Russia, and playing some of those games in Siberia. It was quite the experience, but overall, I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, Mark, we hear stories about, you know, the KHL when it started to form, but you know, now it's obviously turned into a juggernaut of a league across overseas. But early on, you know, those first couple of years, you heard the stories of the infrastructure not being up to the standard. Was that the case through your experience? Was it still a league that was kind of building out? And do you have any stories regarding that?
You know, when with me being in Riga, it wasn't so bad. It was, you know, they ran it very professionally, and that was great. But there was definitely a few teams in the league. I know, like Vitas, that team Vitas, where I heard a lot of different stories from a lot of guys that played there. You know, they really liked their Canadian fighters, right? So they, whenever all their imports were fighters, but it was like I think a KGB mob guy that ran it. So it was, hear a lot of stories about him bringing guns into the locker room and intermission and stuff and waving it around. Who knows if it was loaded or whatever. But some of the stories you hear is quite crazy there. And then there's just some other teams where if an import player is not playing up to their standards, they would kind of set them up for failure for a breach of contract, so they can whether see him like drinking a beer out at a restaurant and kind of bust him and then try to fire him and not have to pay him, you know. So there's a lot of different things like that, but I've never had a bag of money in a handed to me, you know, in an attic or anything like that. But I've heard stories of other people.
and yeah, we occasionally hear those stories, but it seems like the league is in a much better place now. But Mark, thank you so much, and thank you for going down memory lane with us as well, talking about your days in Anaheim and Detroit and overseas. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks for the call, guys. I appreciate it.